Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, before we talk to Jackie Schechner, I got to tell you about something super duper important. In case you're not aware, we produce 4 daily podcasts every week. That means a new show every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Now, you might be wondering, why the hell you don't see this mysterious Friday show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and whatever? That's because our Friday After Party podcast, with all of its revealing discussions about sex, drugs, rock and roll, and politics, is only available through our Patreon page. So please help support this show by subscribing to our Friday After Party podcast for just $10 per month. That's bobsuskashow.com, or just click the all caps Patreon link beneath the logo at bobsuska.com. And now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, October 23, 2019, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. My guest today is the great Jackie Schechner from InvestigateRussia.org, The Stephanie Miller Show, and soon to be on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network, co-hosting a show with the OG Sexy Liberal, Hal Sparks. That's sexyliberal.com. Today we'll talk about whatever the hell that was on the Hill today, with Republicans storming the skiff where impeachment testimony was underway. Plus, we're going to talk about Russia, of course, and the ongoing alternative reality being manufactured by Trump and Fox News. Oh, and be sure to follow Jackie on Twitter. Link in the description. Okay, let's bring Jackie in for her 4th appearance on the interview show. So, Jim Jordan, who looks like E.T. right after they revived him. Matt Gaetz, Steve Scalise, even Steve King was in there too. And a couple of
really
dozen other Republicans.
Who of the morons.
Yeah. They stormed the skiff where testimony was taking place. One of the craziest things about this, Jackie, is there were already Republicans in there. And they're talking about,
of course
about,
there are.
What is Adam Schiff hiding? Steve Scalise was
nothing.
Outside. Why is he hiding so much from us Republicans, and there are already Republicans in there?
You know what it is? It's like they didn't bother to read the How to Be a Congressman 101 brochure. Where it's, dude, if you're not on the committee, you don't get to just arbitrarily participate.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why the House Intelligence Committee is the House Intelligence Committee, because they get information that other people don't get.
Yeah.
And the people who are chosen to be on that committee are chosen for a reason, although I'm not sure why Devin Nunes is still hanging around. But they've got plenty of shills for the president in on this. So you don't need to storm the castle with your nonsense claiming that there's something happening behind closed doors. This is all procedure and protocol. This is exactly the way it's supposed to be going down.
Yeah.
Matt Gaetz needs to take a pill and relax.
Are you perceiving the desperation in all of this? The fact that they're attacking the process rather than the actual crimes themselves?
They can't go after the actual substance.
Yeah.
So they're doing everything they can to distract from the process. And it's disturbing because we're talking about a matter here of national security.
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about is the president of the United States trading national security for some sort of personal political advantage.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would think that all of these people, especially Republicans, who always claim to be the party of national security and law and order, would be interested in locking that down. And instead, what they're interested in is upsetting the apple cart and trying to claim that there's some sort of conspiracy going on or some sort of deep state coup. It's absurd.
Yeah.
It's absurd. We're in this like weird upside down world now where there's a complaint that the process is happening exactly the way it's supposed to.
Yes. They're having to invent an entire like alternative reality, right? Where they're, it's almost like fan fiction.
They're in Stranger Things, like Matt Gaetz version.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah. It's basically,
but they're all the slimy monsters.
Right, right. Adam Schiff is this unhinged maniac, which I'm sorry, as far as members of Congress go, Adam Schiff is one of the most centered, even-keeled members of Congress, much to the chagrin of some Democrats who would like to see him get a little more fiery on occasion, but that's just not his style.
Look, they're taking depositions. They're sitting in a room and they're taking depositions from members of the diplomatic corps and members of the government who are have bared witness to what it is the Trump administration officials are doing, this like shadow diplomacy that they're conducting. And the members of Congress who aren't part of those committees have no business being in the room.
No, not at all.
Period. Like, it's not even a question. It's not like you're being held out of something that you have the responsibility or the right to be a part of.
Yeah.
Go sit down.
Exactly. Wait, I mean, that's part of the fan fiction. That's part of the alternative reality in all of this, is that they're saying things like, oh, why doesn't Donald Trump get a chance to cross-examine witnesses? Why is this happening in complete secret? What is Adam Schiff hiding? And the thing is, of course, this is all fantasy. It is contrary reality. It is just on some other fictitious level that has no bearing on what the rest of us observe as empirical reality, right? And so
it's so disturbing. It's one thing when it comes from the deranged mind of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It's another when you have like a dozen members of Congress who are buying into it too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the part that's so disturbing, right? Yeah. I mean, these are elected officials who are buying into the fantasy, this nonsense deep state conspiracy coup idea. It's ridiculous.
Well, I get the sense that they don't believe it themselves, that what they're doing they're putting on a show for the naive, gullible fanboys of Donald Trump, the red hats. They're assuming that none of those people understand that, you know, for example, the quid pro quo is completely detailed in the transcript of the non-transcript transcript of the phone call between Trump and Zelensky. They're assuming that the red hats don't know that there's no cross-examination of witnesses in an impeachment inquiry. That's not how it works. This is more of a grand jury investigation. That's the template for all of this. They don't know that. So, of course, Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan and all the rest of the Matt Gaetz are going to stand up in front of microphones and go, well, this is an amazing breach of due process here that they're not allowing the cross-examination of witnesses, when in fact that's never supposed to happen in this case. That's what happens,
you know,
in the trial.
It reminds me of, it's like a tennis match back and forth, like two people playing tennis, and I like run onto the court like, why don't I get to play? How come I don't get to play? Throw me the ball. Like,
yeah.
Dude, you're not invited. Like, this has nothing to do with you. Like,
right,
get off
right.
the court. I mean, it's such wild madness. You know, I was watching last night. Don't ask me why, but I flipped on Fox News just to amuse myself.
Because you're a professional and you want to see what the opposition is saying. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with
that. My cable news rehab lasted like a month, and then all this impeachment stuff started, and I couldn't do it anymore. And I turned on Fox News, and they had Representative Radcliffe, John Radcliffe, who you remember was like this close to being a member of the cabinet.
Oh, yeah.
And he was saying on Fox News that there is no quid pro quo because nobody who's Ukrainian knew that the aid was being held back.
Yeah.
And there couldn't be any quid pro quo without the quo, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, until somebody who speaks Ukrainian could tell me that they knew that the aid was... Well, meanwhile, I went back through Ambassador Taylor's opening, just the opening statement, which was 15 pages. And on pages 10 and 11, it specifically talks about the Ukrainian representative for President Zelensky hearing about the aid being withheld and how there was an actual conversation saying you're not going to get anything until the president comes out and makes this public. So basically, they didn't even read up to page 10.
Yeah.
Like that, if you even read up to page 10 of the 15-page opening statement, you would have seen that, yes, in fact, the Ukrainians did know that the aid was being withheld until the president came out with his statement saying mm-hmm. he was going to open this bogus investigation. So nothing that they're purporting to be true is actually true or factually accurate. They can't be bothered to read. They can't be bothered to learn. They can't be bothered to notice that there's rules and regulations and facts.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating to have to fight that, because I don't know how you fight lies with facts if people aren't going to believe that there's actual facts.
Yeah, in fact, I was just going to ask you about that. And I get the sense that, and I've read some things along these lines, Jackie, that for the Trumpers, for the Red Hats, for everyone who's aligned on the Republican side with Donald Trump, which is most Republicans, they believe now that the political debate in this country is no longer right versus wrong. It is winning versus losing. So they're not motivated to be right. They don't care if they're right or not, as long as they're winning. And that is, to me, that's one of the most terrifying aspects of Trumpism. The fact that
what are you winning?
Yeah,
are you winning the total destruction of democracy? Are you winning like being Putin's new best friend?
Right.
What are you winning? Because there's no win here. This doesn't help our nation at all.
No, absolutely not. And of course, those of us who are normal, those of us who exist on Earth One, understand what reality is, and they're creating their own reality. And as long as whatever it is, 40% of the American voting population is going along with that reality, that's a win for them. That's owning the libs is a win for them.
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. Maybe this will help.
Okay.
I don't feel owned.
Yeah, that's true.
You're not owning me. Like, you're not owning the libs. What you're doing is making yourself look like an idiot.
Yeah.
And you're slowing down the process of saving our democracy. Like, there is no owning. You're not like, mm-hmm. ooh, I got the liberals. Like,
yeah.
Dude, what you're doing is like tearing down the country and feeding into Putin. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't get where you're winning on any of this. Like, it's going to be a huge destruction of democracy, and then you can give a big thumbs up and say, I did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not winning anything. Nobody's winning. Like, it's not, that's not what this is about. You know, it's also interesting to me. I had this conversation, Hal Sparks and I have been doing some podcasting together.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Conversation. Yeah, it's fascinating. And he's, you know, he's always going off on these brilliant tangents, which I love. So 90% of it is kind of corralling him back. I always learn something. It's really fun. And he's such a great comedian that, you know, he goes off on these funny riffs. But,
oh, yeah, really sharp.
One of the things we were talking about yesterday was what happens once Trump outlives his usefulness to Putin.
Yeah.
And we're going to be left in such shambles because he's doing all of Russia's bidding. I mean, we can talk about this some more, too, is that all this Ukraine stuff obviously circles back to Russia.
Yeah.
So, and the Syria stuff, for that matter. But once he outlives his importance and he outlives his usefulness, then what happens? Does Putin then, you know, accidentally leak the compromat he's got?
Yeah.
Does he then, where does it end here? Because Trump doesn't have anything other than the presidency right now. Like, once that's gone, where does he go?
Yeah, yeah.
Where is he useful to anyone?
In fact, Jonathan Chait just wrote a piece for New York Magazine. It was a pretty short piece, but I think it nailed the point, which is that I think they may be looking, and this involves Putin, obviously, but more specific to the congressional Republicans, that Trump may be in a conundrum like Joe Pesci's character in Casino, where the mob bosses are okay with Joe Pesci's erratic behavior as long as the money keeps flowing in. And once the money stops flowing in, then they bury him in a cornfield. You know what I mean? And so that may be occurring. And I think Rachel Maddow has been hinting something along those lines, like Russia is getting bored with Trump and they may actually start to sell off their assets. Everything must go. And they may be pulling out, backing away from their support of Donald Trump, which he may or may not need it. I don't know if he's going to continue to need it because he's certainly putting together other deals along those lines. But that, I think that's what's happening. I think part of Donald Trump's weakness
is going to be a Trump Tower safe zone.
Yeah, I think
his Trump Tower in the swath of land that he's handing over to Erdogan.
In fact, you know, Rachel Maddow was on Mark Maron not too long ago, and they were talking about how, well, maybe after Trump leaves office, whether it's through resignation or any of the other possibilities, that he suddenly gets asylum in Russia and Putin puts him up in the same apartment complex as Edward Snowden. So, we're working on your presidential castle, Mr. Trump. It's going to be done maybe 6 months, maybe.
Till then, here's a dorm.
Yeah. Instead, he ends up having to live in this rat-infested place in Moscow. Yeah. So
I mean, look, none of us knows how this is going to end.
Right.
But I do know that most of us hope that it ends sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And it does start to feel like I don't know where we go from here. Like, if this isn't the tipping point, then nothing is. Like, mm-hmm. if you have ample evidence now, especially, I mean, I don't know if you went, I'm assuming that you went through Ambassador Taylor's opening statement.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was some of the most, like, detailed, damning evidence mm-hmm. That we've heard come out of any of this. And look, as somebody who spent years working on this Trump-Russia investigation stuff, nothing I'm reading is of any surprise.
Yeah.
Because it does all circle back to Russia. I mean, Ukraine is a proxy for Russia in all mm-hmm. of this. Putin loves to blame things on Ukraine, right? They'll shoot down Russia, they'll shoot down a passenger jet, and they'll blame it on Ukraine, or yep. they'll invade Crimea and blame it on Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine is the breeding ground for all Russia conspiracy theory and bad acts. I mean, they test everything out in Ukraine first. So none of this surprises me, but I am glad that we're getting such definitive evidence now, and at least the ability for people to see it in black and white in a very short period of time is useful.
And the Ukraine
thing. So I'm grateful for that.
With Ukraine and the quid pro quo that has obviously been arranged here, does that lend more insight into how for lack of a better term, the Russia collusion took place? We can kind of superimpose the deal making that was going on with Ukraine onto what Trump may have done with Russia, where maybe at some point he's arranging through, obviously, buffas. The boss has a lot of buffas. Some sort of quid pro quo arrangement regarding sanctions. And, of course, Mike Flynn fits perfectly into that equation.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, I believe that this is, it's almost like Trump saw what Putin did and thought he could do the same.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't have the authoritarian power that Putin does. And he doesn't have the KGB training.
Oh, yeah.
And he doesn't have the skill set, and he doesn't, I mean, I just think that Trump is way out of his league, and he saw what Putin was able to do for him and thought, huh, like I can handle some of this myself. Or he took orders from Putin to do it.
Yeah.
Because you know, first of all, Trump couldn't point to Ukraine on a map. I mean, he has no idea where it is. He doesn't know about any of this stuff. But this is a Putin pet project, right? Yeah. Like, stopping Ukraine from being a free democracy is a Putin project.
Yeah.
So I think that what's important to understand is that this is clearly not coming out of Trump's brain all by himself.
Are you as... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I just think it's important to keep in mind that this is Trump trying to do what he saw Putin do and not being successful at it.
Were you blown away when you heard that they're actually investigating this whole Ukraine DNC CrowdStrike conspiracy theory?
This is nuts.
Yeah.
This is nuts. Like, and look, I don't speak right-wing conspiracy theory, so correct me if I'm wrong, but the idea that somehow CrowdStrike, which is an American company, like a California-based cybersecurity firm, was called in to help the DNC figure out who'd hacked their servers, then took the server and, like, shipped it to Ukraine, FedEx, like, what do I know? And, like, hid the server in Ukraine to hide, like, who actually... I mean, it's so far-fetched and so insane, and the fact that it's now somehow taken on legs to the point that our Attorney General of the United States is, like, gallivanting about the world
trying to
find a way to prove this conspiracy theory. I mean, this is insanity, and it's amazing to me that I mean, Bill Barr never should have been confirmed in the first place, and that's a whole other conversation. I'm disgusted that you know, the warning signs weren't heeded.
Yeah.
Because when you write an audition letter basically saying, I believe you have absolute power, hire me, that should be disqualifying. Mm-hmm. But the fact that Bill Barr is going around the world trying to prove a conspiracy theory to exonerate Russia in 2016 is maddening.
Yeah.
And it's crazy making, because this isn't a thing. And somehow our Department of Justice, I mean, does he have nothing to do at home? Is there nothing for him to do here?
Right, right.
Can somebody get him a hobby? I don't understand how our attorney general has time to be doing this.
Oh, I know. And I'm wondering, is Trump's hubris with Ukraine, and now we're hearing about China and some of the other attempts at quid pro quo deals related to the election, is this hubris something that he's always done and he's just being stupid and reckless about it now? Or does he feel emboldened by the fact that he's got Bill Barr to backstop him legally?
I think this is the kind of stuff he's done through his entire career.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been this kind of scrutiny on him. I think for his entire life, people were just like, well, that's Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
That's just Trump. That's just how Trump operates. It's just what Trump does. Like, I don't understand. I mean, I guess it's that he hasn't really come under. I mean, there's no reason why his foundation couldn't have been outed earlier, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was skimming money off of his foundation, and it wasn't actual giving to charity or any of the stuff that he's, you know, since been uncovered, hasn't been there for years. It's just nobody was really paying that close of attention to him. And now that he's in the role of the president, there's all this scrutiny on him. At the same time, he's also got this sense of being emboldened by the office of the presidency, which he often confuses with a dictatorship or some sort of authoritarian regime.
Yeah.
So he's operating the same way he always did, with the assumption that he's going to get away with it because he always has.
Yeah.
And I think Bill Barr does give him an added level of confidence. And then part of me thinks he's just too stupid to know. Really, because he's just not a bright man. And if you watch that like nonsense press conference today, I don't know how you stand in the White House at a podium and talk about how grateful Syria is for all of your help when you basically abandoned the Kurds and left them for slaughter. And you're going out and talking about how their leadership is so grateful to you. I mean, we all know that's a huge lie. And he stands there and just puts words together that don't form actual sentences and thoughts that don't have any bearing on reality.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell that this is not an educated, bright man. It's somebody who has always operated by slightly bending, if not breaking, the law.
Yeah.
And there's no reason to think he couldn't continue to get away with it. If you've made it to 70 and you haven't gone to jail yet, what makes you think you're ever going to go to jail?
It's really a miraculous thing. And in fact, he was tweeting today, the president was, that we have captured all of those escaped ISIS prisoners. And in fact, the U.S. envoy to Syria was in the Senate yesterday testifying to foreign relations and saying that we don't know where the hell the ISIS prisoners are. We've lost them. They're gone.
They're gone.
I mean, and again, that goes back to what I was talking about as far as the alternative reality that Donald Trump is fashioning around his presidency. And I think a lot of it is backstopped by Bill Barr. But I think it's also because Donald Trump has certain assumptions about American politics that he learned from Fox News Channel and just operating in the corrupt realms of New York real estate. And I think he sincerely has this worldview that all politicians lie. And he's just doing the same as everyone else does. He's just lying right along with all the other politicians who he insists are liars. You know, like Barack Obama and George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. Why can't Donald Trump be a liar, too? And I think somewhere in the back of his worm-ridden brain, he's going, why are they attacking me for lying? Everybody lies. But no one else has ever invented this level of alternative reality, have they?
No, and I think it's even simpler than that. Like, I don't think Donald Trump ever gave much thought to politics other than as some sort of leverage for power.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't care about foreign policy. He doesn't care about international relations. He doesn't care about domestic programs. He doesn't care about the welfare of the community or the nation as a whole. He sees everything as transactional. Mm-hmm. And so what he does is he operates in the government role the same way he operates in business, which is, who are the most powerful people that I can align with? Who do I have to pay off to get something done? What, you know, where are the bribes? Where do I sign up for that? I mean, mm-hmm. For him, it seems so obvious to me. Like, he sees guys like Putin and Kim Jong-un and Erdogan as the most powerful people in the world. Right. So how do I get in with that upper echelon? Yeah. How do I make nice with those people? Because those are the people who are going to help me get my business done, whatever that business happens to be. Mm-hmm. But there's no sense of what's right for the country. I mean, look, you're talking about a man who took 5 deferments from Vietnam, doesn't give to charity, doesn't care about the little guy, who takes the office of the presidency. And now all of a sudden he's supposed to be this great patriot who cares about you. Like, it's not believable. Like, right. By any stretch, he didn't have some like come to Jesus moment where he decided he was going to spend the last 15 years of his life doing good for the country. Mm-hmm. He's still out looking out for himself. He didn't disassociate from his businesses. He didn't do any of the things he said he was going to do. He likes to create these huge crises and then put out the fire that he created and claim victory. Mm-hmm. It's all incredibly transparent, and it's operating like a shady businessman and a mafia don. I mean, that's where he gets his experience from. We're mm-hmm. only as strong as our life experience, and his life experience is mafia ties and shady business deals.
We're going to return to our conversation with Jackie Schechner in just one second, but I got to stop the conversation here and tell you about ButcherBox. As part of my fitness program, I eat like a metric ton of protein every day. It's kind of ridiculous, but that makes me super picky about my meat products. But thanks to ButcherBox, I don't have to worry about getting quality meats conveniently delivered to my door. Every month, I receive a selection of the very, very best meat without leaving my house. All of ButcherBox's meat is free of antibiotics and added hormones. We're talking about 11 pounds of meat, enough for 24 meals. I'm also able to customize my box so I can get exactly the meats that I want. In fact, I'm already getting the meat sweats just talking about all of this. And right now, ButcherBox is offering new members ground beef for life. That's 2 pounds of ground beef in every box for the life of your subscription, plus $20 off your first box. Just go to butcherbox.com/sexyliberal or enter the promo code sexyliberal at checkout. That's butcherbox.com/sexyliberal or enter promo code sexyliberal at checkout. Thank you for supporting this show by supporting ButcherBox.
The Bob Seska Show.
Well, and also, I mean, going back to his perception of American politics, I always think of the movie Galaxy Quest. I don't know if you've ever seen Galaxy Quest.
Yeah,
Tim
a long
Allen
time
and Sigourney
ago.
Weaver.
Yeah.
And, and what happens in this movie is the space aliens they encounter are space aliens who watched the Galaxy Quest, which is like Star Trek, or like watched
the show.
Star Trek, the show, and assumed that it was a documentary and that it was real and these people really existed with that technology and so on. So they built their entire society around the technology of this TV show, and then mm-hmm. they're like freaked out because none of it actually works the way it's supposed to work, and they're getting decimated by this other Klingon villain race of
here's a good example of that. You remember when Donald Trump brought in the parents of this
child
who was killed? This is a great example of this. So this boy, I think he was 19 or so, was riding on his motorcycle in England, and it was a diplomat's wife who was driving on the wrong side of the road and struck and killed this 19-year-old. And President Trump or someone in the White House invited the parents from England to the White House. And then they proceeded to ambush them by saying that the woman who'd killed their son was in the building and wanted to meet them. I mean, it's a bad reality show ambush. And there's no sense. And according to their accounting of the incident, that he didn't take no for an answer, that they kept saying no, and he kept saying, oh, come on. Like, he kept pushing for it. And there was no concern for the fact that these are grieving parents. There was no concern for the fact that if they were going to do this, they wanted to do this in a place that was comfortable for them on their own home turf, that they had no idea why they were coming to the White House, let alone that they were going to then be surprised by the woman who killed their son, who claimed diplomatic immunity and left the country. So there's a lot going on there, but you're talking about a man who lives in reality television world and thinks everything can be pre-produced and that there's going to be some big reveal and that's going to make everything okay. And I just, to me, when I read that, my heart so went out to this family. I mean, I don't know why they came to the White House in the first place, but my heart so went out to them because I can't imagine being in that level of grief and then being ambushed with something so incredibly callous and thoughtless by the President of the United States.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, sometimes times I have a shred of sympathy for the Red Hats. I know that's striking and an alarming to hear.
Why?
But every once in a while I go, well, you know, they just believed their leadership. I mean, that's kind of what we've always done. And they're just assuming that, well, this guy is presidential material when he was running and now he's president. So I believe the president, and why not? But then, of course, I realize all of the destructive things they're doing, and that sympathy vanishes almost immediately like a Thanos snap. But, you know, here's something that's bugging me, Jackie, and this pertains a little bit to Russia and obviously to Ukraine being the most recent thing. This notion that all of the previous scandals, and you mentioning that the British family that came over to visit, I mean, that basically made a blip of about 2 hours during one day of news.
Right, right.
But this notion that all of his scandals were too difficult for the American people to understand until Ukraine came along. And I'm not blaming the members of Congress or the press for any of this, mind you. But the sad reality is they're kind of exactly right. Americans are too misled and distracted to understand the complexities of things like collusion, obstruction, right, ethnic cleansing, Syrian civil war, money laundering, all the rest of it. Russian oligarchs, whose most of the names you can't even recognize or pronounce. How dangerous is it that high crimes are just basically ignored because we're just too stupid to understand them?
We're too busy and too distracted.
Right,
yeah, I
right.
mean, that's, but that comes down to, like, people not paying attention to politics.
Yeah.
Right? People are like, I'm not political, I don't, and I see it out here in Los Angeles a lot. I mean, obviously coming from D.C. and being in the political world, I'm totally up on everything, and then I have a conversation with my friends out here, and they have no idea who I'm talking about or what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it's no knock on them. They're just in a different world. Mm-hmm. They're just, their world just revolves around different things, which is totally fine. But it harkens back to why politics is so important, because all of these decisions that are being made in Washington end up trickling down and affecting your day-to-day life in ways that you can't even imagine. Yeah, it's infuriating. And I look at, for example, when the news came out about Dmitry Firtash, right, who is the Ukrainian oligarch who is funneling money through Giuliani's thugs, who have since been arrested, to the Trump super PAC and Lord knows who else, Giuliani himself, obviously, but we don't know at this point who else was getting money. But Firtash's name rang such a bell with me that when I set up, I'm not kidding, I set up my Google alerts when all of this Russia Trump stuff started for me, like when I started working on it a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
I set up my Google alerts and the first name I put in was his. Like above Adam Schiff, above Donald Trump Jr., above, like, yeah, because he knew there was something going on there. Like there was something, because he was fighting extradition. He seemed interconnected with a lot of people. It seemed somebody to watch. So I wasn't all that surprised. I was actually kind of like patting myself on the back, pretty proud of myself for seeing that he was somehow interconnected and they weren't paying enough attention to what was going on with him.
Yeah.
It seems to be the thread that you need to pull on at this point, right? And how he's connected and where all this money is funneling in from. But it seems like more and more evidence pointing to the same MO that we had, I think, during the election, which is, you know, Russian and Ukrainian oligarch money funneling in through proxies to Donald Trump and his associates.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to keep track of because they're using middlemen and proxies and buffers. But, you know, Firtash, for example, is connected to the highest levels of the Russian mafia. These are guys, I mean, I think these are the guys who've been money laundering through Trump properties for decades.
Yep.
It's the same group of people. And so it's not surprising to me that he would just continue business as usual. I think ultimately when the chips fall where they may, we're going to find out that Trump not only is hugely in debt to Russian entities, and so the stuff that he's doing now is paying off that debt in some ways. He doesn't want people to know how indebted he is to Russian oligarchs. And I think there is some kind of sketchy compromise that they've got on him that, you know, who knows if that'll ever come out. But I think it's a combination of the two. I think it's he's got to pay off old debts.
Yep.
And I think that they have a whole bunch of embarrassing information on him. And I think, you know, that's in the same folder with the embarrassing information on Lindsey Graham.
Right. And, you know, obviously, when we hear about Ukraine and we're in discussions about quid pro quo and the impeachment is moving forward, I can't help but to go back to that discussion that he had with George Stephanopoulos. It must have been early summer, I want to say, like May, somewhere around there, where Trump was saying, yeah, why not take help from another government?
Yeah.
I mean, why?
Sure.
What's wrong with that? If they offer, why not just take it?
I think I would listen to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems as if he just thinks that this is just a normal thing that people do, that it's okay. If someone comes up and offers you help, you take the help. And
because there are no lines in international business.
Right.
And so it doesn't matter who you deal with in international business. Mm-hmm. He doesn't understand there's geopolitical consequences when you're talking about government relations and international relations. You've got whole nations at stake. None of that dawns on him. He just sees all of this as another business transaction.
Yep.
So the international relations part of this and the fact that you've got people's lives at stake, like, doesn't dawn on him. It's all transaction. It even came out in the testimony from Ambassador Taylor, where he said that Gordon Sondland was saying to him, you know, Trump sees this as a business, and if you're going to write a check, then you got to get the services that you're writing for. Wow. And Ambassador Taylor had to say to him, hey, Ukraine doesn't owe us anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not, you know, Trump isn't writing a check of his own money. It's American taxpayer dollars that are going to help Ukraine with its defense to protect its fledgling democracy. Like, yeah. Donald Trump isn't writing out of the Trump Foundation slush fund in exchange for something from Ukraine. Like, that's not how it works.
Mm-hmm.
But that's clearly how he's... Or even when he tried to put the G7 at Doral, right? He still sees him... Mick Mulvaney says he still sees himself in the hospitality business. Like, dude, you're not.
Amazing. Just,
you want to be president? Be president.
Yeah. The disconnect with reality is one of the things that I sit with my mouth agape and my eyes bulging out watching that happen. Like, I can't believe that it's actually going on, that there is this vast a gulf between empirical reality and the way the president is operating. You know, I have a question for you. This is kind of along the lines of what I was just talking about with regard to the American people being too distracted and maybe not up to speed with these things, putting it...
You know, investigaterussia.org is still online.
Yeah, 100%. And related to that, put it this way, the Republicans are still screaming about every alleged Democratic scandal dating back to Vince Foster, Benghazi, Hillary's emails. Every time they get a chance, they're screaming about that. Meanwhile, I think liberals have all but abandoned the Russia story because Mueller didn't appear with Junior in handcuffs and a stack of indictments against the president. Is this why we lose this shit, or do we? I mean, do we give up too easily?
We do. And I'm disappointed, you know, when we find out that the Mueller report was over redacted and we find out that Don Jr. never testified and Don McGahn never testified. I mean, it does feel like there were a bunch of rocks that were left unturned. And that's frustrating to me. I mean, look, I'm not going to knock Mueller. He served this country well, and he's a lifetime patriot. But I wonder if Barr shut him down, or if he was hamstrung by resources, because it doesn't make sense that you would just throw up your hands and say, well, you know, they destroyed evidence and they used encrypted messaging and we couldn't get into it. So, oh, well,
yeah.
I mean, it just that to me doesn't seem like it's all that thorough. And the fact that you're not going to talk to Don Jr. about, you're not going to subpoena him to talk about the meeting, you're not going to go back. I mean, the Eric Prince stuff to me is the most incredible.
Yeah.
Like, portion of all of it, the fact that we know for a fact he lied to Congress about what he was doing down in the Seychelles, and he's just skates away like nothing happens. To me, the fact that all of these loose ends are just left loose.
Well, didn't Schiff place a criminal referral against Eric Prince?
Where's that going to go?
With the edge of nowhere, obviously.
That's going to go to Barr's DOJ.
Obviously, it's going to go by
the same thing like Gordon Sondland, right? If you refer that to the Department of Justice for perjury, because we're now finding out that what he testified has nothing to do with what Ambassador Taylor did. There's some discrepancies there. You can refer to the Justice Department all you want. It's going to go in Bill Barr's circular file.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going anywhere. So by putting Bill Barr, you know, in the position that he did, Donald Trump got himself the Roy Cohn he was looking for.
And in fact, I'm not sure if you know for sure what happened, but one of the things that we don't talk about a whole lot anymore is how the SDNY investigation kind of mysteriously just faded away shortly after the Mueller report debacle happened. Is that gone? Is that done? And did Bill Barr do it?
I don't know where that stands. Yeah, I don't know where that stands at this point. I mean, I think it's encouraging that there's this investigation into Giuliani at this point.
Yeah.
The fact that that's taking off, and I wonder if that's just the independence of the sovereign district. They call it, you know, the sovereign district of New York.
Yeah.
That they're doing that, and I saw somebody last night saying that, you know, none of the same people that were there when Giuliani was there are still in the department, so that's a good thing. Just because, you know, there's no bias at this point. I don't know. I don't know what happened to that. I do know, I mean, we heard there were, what, like eight referrals that came out of Mueller's Mueller's investigation. I don't know what happened to all of them and where they've gone. And the other thing is, we don't hear day to day very much about Manafort or Flynn or Gates or Roger Stone's trial, which is coming up in November. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of this stuff just kind of falls by the wayside because the president is creating a daily fire that needs to be put out or a daily distraction. There's so much happening. It's unfortunate because there is a 24-hour news cycle and we do have 24-hour news channels, and it would be a great service if we didn't run the same stories over and over again. But there is still news out there. I mean, there's still the Russia stuff isn't completely over. It's just fallen by the wayside for the time being, and that's frustrating. But I understand that we have a very short attention span as a nation, and we can only focus on a handful of things at a time. Most of the things at a time now are on fire, so you have to sort of pay attention to those.
And you mentioned Rudy Giuliani. The thing that keeps running through head is I know. What the fuck?
I didn't mean to do that.
What the fuck happened to him? I mean, he was no saint before 9/11, that's for sure. But he was America's mayor for a period of time there. And now he's nothing more than like a mob fixer. He's nothing more than this petty mafia lawyer who's running around with all of these shady characters, running this shadow State Department completely off the books. That's one of the, I think, conundrums, one of the things that historians of the future are going to constantly, and certainly historians of the present as well, are trying to figure out, like, what became of that guy? What turned him? It's like a Breaking Bad series, you know? He could make a Breaking Bad series about Rudy Giuliani going from America's mayor to petty mob lawyer. What turned? Did he let the 9/11 thing go to his head? Is that what it was? How did he end up going down this road?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you hit a point in your career where you think, what are my options now? Like, where do I go from here? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, he gets older and he gets more curmudgeonly and... The money was too tempting. I don't know. I mean, you know, you can't say what goes through somebody's head. I mean, you've seen that sometimes people change as they get older. Their life view changes. It's hard to tell. I mean, you're talking about a man who's been through, what, three wives at this point?
Yeah.
And somebody who feels the need to defend Donald Trump. I don't know what goes through his brain. It does seem that he's deteriorated. To a level that's incomprehensible.
I
don't know.
I always go back to the brainwashing, the Fox News Channel, AM talk radio brainwashing that happens, and where they're appealing directly to a certain kind of older white man. And maybe that's it. But then I go, is that too simplistic? Is that too simplistic an equation to reach? You know?
I don't know. I mean, look, he lives in New York or, you know, in that world. And I wonder if, you know, you can get, it's very easy to get, surrounded by your own community, or I don't want to say like boxed in or fenced in, because New York's a huge world and I love it very much. But I think that once you get into a tier of associates, and really in any community, I guess, but in a major urban area, like something like that, where he's in an upper echelon of people, that he wants to maintain that status.
Yeah.
And so you go for whatever you can to, I don't know, I'm speculating, but I would imagine it has something to do with that, you know, wanting to affiliate himself with people who are moneyed in the way that he'd like to be moneyed or he is. I wouldn't put it past him to have there be a huge payday in all of this for him. Yeah, and it looks like he got, what, $500,000 from the... From the Ukrainian thugs.
Well, good luck with the asset forfeiture, Rudy Giuliani, because
that's what's around the corner for him. Fun. I think. It really, Trump surrounded himself with the best of the best. These are really likable. These are really likable.
Yes,
folks.
Respectable guys.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, and in fact, focusing in on New York a little bit more here. I'm trying to raise some awareness of the distinct possibility that Donald Trump is deliberately manipulating the stock market. And then
I haven't paid that close attention to it, but I've heard this, that people think that he makes these announcements and then there's like a sell-off and people are making money off of his calls. That would not surprise me at all. Oh.
No. And in fact, it's happening in plain sight. William Cohen wrote a piece for Vanity Fair where he actually started to connect some of the dots between some of these massive purchases of September E-minis on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, at the, like orders of 420,000 of those contracts. And then the very next day, Trump steps out and makes some bogus announcement, a lie about being contacted by the Chinese trade envoys, saying that that, oh yeah, we're going to reach a deal here very, very soon. And then suddenly the S&P flies through the roof. And this guy, whoever this mystery investor was, ended up making $1.8 billion profit off of that one trade. And it coincided perfectly. And there are numerous events exactly like that. Trades that happen the day before or hours before, in some cases, a Trump blurt or tweet or, you know, some sort of yawp during chopper talk or whatever the hell he does. And so what really strikes me as particularly nefarious are, as you said, those sell-offs where there might be short sales involved, too, which is, as the steward of the economy, would be not just criminal and impeachable, but completely unpatriotic on top of everything else, that he would actually be driving businesses, investors downward with his actions.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, when you have no moral compass and no values and no ethical standards, you're willing to do whatever it takes to make a buck. And he loves two things. He loves money and he loves himself.
Yeah.
And that's it. So, you know, anything beyond that, he doesn't care. He doesn't care. He doesn't care if it's right or wrong. He doesn't care who it hurts. He doesn't care that it's illegal. Like, none of that matters, really. He just lives in this fantasy world where, it is his fantasy world, and I hope that the reality hits him on the way out. It doesn't surprise me if there's a intentional manipulation going on and there's not some huge kickback.
Well, you know, at some point, Jackie, I hope we can convene these chats and not have to talk about Trump corruption the whole time. And maybe
wouldn't that be nice?
Discuss healthcare or something.
But
before we wrap up, I do have one healthcare question for you.
Sure.
And I don't want to make too big a deal of it because I don't know that it is such a big deal. But do you think Democrats are making too big a fuss over Elizabeth Warren's refusal to admit that she'd raise taxes to pay for Medicare for All?
Ugh. Yes. Okay. Here's my quick take on all of this. Okay. I think this is really important. Every time we have these debates and we talk about what people's healthcare plan is, I just want to scream at the television, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And here's why it doesn't matter. I don't care if you want to implement some sort of public option. I don't care if you want to move to Medicare for All. None of it's going to happen unless you have control of the Senate.
That's right.
None of it's going anywhere.
Yep.
I worked on the healthcare debate. I can explain to you from here until, you know, until tomorrow why a public option is a really good idea. We couldn't get it. And we couldn't get it because members of Congress weren't willing to vote for it, and because the insurance companies put a tremendous amount of pressure on the members of Congress that they've bought and paid for not to allow it.
Yep.
Because they did two things. They turned around and said it would be unfair competition, and then they said it'd be crap. And I don't know how it could be the two things at the same time, but they whatever argument they needed to demonize the public option, they did.
Yep.
But that's a wonderful solution, and I would love to have a public option the same way I would have loved to have a public option back in 2008 and 2009 and 2010. But we couldn't get it. And anybody who says right now that they're advocating for a public option needs to then follow up with how they're going to get us there.
Yeah.
Because it's the same disingenuity that you're blaming on, or dishonesty, I guess is the word I'm looking for, that you're blaming on Elizabeth Warren. You want to know how she's going to pay for Medicare for All? Fine. Tell me how you're going to get a public option into the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Because neither of you is going to do it. And so when you talk about that, like, to me, that's such a waste of time and energy. Like, we know you're going to fix the healthcare system. We're going to do whatever we can get done. We're going to continue to build on the Affordable Care Act. Like, that's what Democrats do.
Yeah.
Republicans tear it down and Democrats build it up.
Yep.
And that's all you need to do for now, right? And then, like, move forward once you get elected, and then we can figure it all out. We can get the smartest people in the room, the doctors, the stakeholders, the patients, like, all of them, right? The policy writers. I don't want politicians in there because I don't care what politicians think about healthcare. I want all of the smartest people who know how the healthcare system works to get in a room and figure it all out.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, spending any more time on that debate stage discussing the difference between the public option and Medicare for All, Medicare for Some, is a giant waste of energy and time.
Yes, it is.
And then the other thing, too, I think it's important to note is that, and I use myself as a personal example here because it's easy to relate to, is that between my premiums and my co-pays and my labs, I end up paying at least $7,000 a year for my health insurance.
Wow.
That does not include my $7,200 deductible, and that doesn't include any of the doctors that I see who aren't in network that I pay in cash because they're really good doctors and they don't take insurance.
Yep.
So we're talking about, I don't know, let's say $14,000, $15,000 on healthcare every year. If you want to raise my taxes, as long as you come in under that, I win.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what people don't understand. I don't care if my taxes go up a little bit. If I don't have premiums anymore, if I don't have co-pays, if I don't have deductibles, if I don't have to worry that I'm going to get a mistaken $500 bill from Quest Labs every time I go to get blood work done, like, enough.
Yeah.
Like, you will save me so much time and energy and heartache, and you'll save money at the doctor's office because they don't have to hire somebody to argue with the insurance companies anymore. Like, all of this stuff is a benefit, and I wish people would message it properly, because I don't think there's anybody out there in America, Republican, Democrat, Independent, or Martian, who doesn't understand the hassle that you deal with healthcare in this country.
Yeah, and there are two things that I think a lot of first-timers on the political scene are missing, and those of us who observed what happened in 2009 into 2010 with the Affordable Care Act realize one of these things, which is that even if we have 67 Democrats in the Senate who are ready to vote for healthcare reform of some sort, it doesn't mean that it's going to pass, because you're going to have 10 or 12 of them who are from red states who don't want to have to say, go back to their people and say, yeah, we're going to be raising taxes on the middle class. It's a non-starter for them. And in addition to that, Elizabeth Warren doesn't want to be trapped. And I'm not necessarily in Elizabeth Warren's camp on this. I'm just speaking in terms of reality, that I think people who are goading Elizabeth Warren into trying to admit that she's going to have to raise taxes also don't realize that if she does it, Donald Trump is going to do nothing but hammer her for 6 months about pledging taxes. To raise taxes on the middle class, right alongside saying Pocahontas 1,000 times a day. So those are a couple of factors, I think, that weigh into this, where, no, we don't want to get lost in the weeds of healthcare, because it's, first of all, it scares people when you get too detailed like that. And it's sausage making, and that is confusing. I mean, most people just don't even know how their own healthcare works, much less healthcare reform. So, yeah.
Look, I put it out into the universe, like, hire me, use me. I know how to message this stuff. Like, stop. You guys are just, like, eating your own at this point.
Yeah.
Like, we can get all the Democrats on message. We can get everybody saying the same thing. Like, the healthcare fight is not going to be the delineator. Like, the reason why people are saying Elizabeth Warren is too liberal or too progressive, and they're claiming this Medicare for all, you're going to throw everybody. Like, stop with that. Mm-hmm. Like, stop. Like, is she a good, kind person who fights for the middle class, who wants to do what's right for our country? I mean, I'm just using her as an example. Like, stop trying to nitpick Medicare for all. Like, it's not going to matter if you don't elect Democrats in the Senate.
Right.
So you're going to discount her on a plan to try to get us to universal coverage. And plus, there are plenty of other countries, democracies, like major countries, that have all kinds of cool healthcare plans where it's a mix of public and private, where they've, you know, gradually moved to a national healthcare plan. Somewhere in Spain where, like, everybody's covered, but then you can buy into private insurance on top of it if you want to. Like, there are ways to do this. But on that debate stage, when everybody's got 5 minutes and they're jumping all over each other, is not the way to have this conversation.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, my God. You got to write a strategy memo to the DNC and to the top five front runners and let them know how they need to be talking.
Like an open letter? Yeah, maybe that's what I need to do.
Or just it can be a private memo. I know, like, Steve Bannon did that with Obama back during the ACA debate. He wrote a whole strategy memo, and they actually kind of applied a lot of it.
Did they use it?
I think they did. I think they used it.
I mean, for something other than, like, toilet paper?
No, I think they actually...
No knock on Steve. I'm saying, like, do they pay attention?
I think they did, and I think that's one of the reasons why it certainly helped. But, okay, Jackie, well, you're one of the smartest people I know, and it's always great to talk to you.
I love talking to you. It's awesome. You let me rant and rave like a lunatic. It's fun.
And the new show with Hal Sparks is called Wonky Donk?
I know. It's so crazy. We were goofing around. I know. Well, we were goofing around. I know. I've been thinking for a long time about, they've been asking me to do my own thing. And I don't know. I love talking to you, and I love talking to other people. I don't know how good I'd be on my own, because I don't need to hear my own voice for 20 minutes at a time. You're very sweet. Thank you. And maybe if people have an idea of what they want to hear me talk about for 20 minutes at a time. But I love talking to you, and I love talking. So I approached Hal and said, look, if you're going to do something, maybe we can do it together. Because I love sidekicking with him. We used to do it on Stephanie's show a lot. So anyway, long story short is that we want to dig into the wonkiness of rules and regulations. And he made a joke about, it's going to end up being something stupid like Wonky Donk, isn't it? And then that stuck.
Yeah.
It stuck, and we couldn't get rid of it. So now he's making graphics. It's going to be a whole thing.
I was so excited when I heard the news that you were going to be joining the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Except I'm going to have to say Wonky Donk every time I go to promote the show.
The Wonky Donk. Isn't it fun? It's so fun. Yeah. Yes. No, I don't know. I don't know. I love it in that it's so quirky and weird that it's, like, perfect for me.
Yeah.
but it's stuck, and now we're stuck with it. So
we have to get you back on this show again very, very soon. It was, I think the last time was somewhere back in June, and we can't wait that long between
anytime. Right. Hit me up. I love it.
Okay, you bet. Thank you so much, Jackie. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
This is Frangela, and we host The Final Word with Frangela and Idiot of the Week podcast.
And if you enjoyed this episode, you'll love our show, where every week we talk about real news, real funny. So come on over and listen to The Final Word with Frangela and find it at sexyliberal.com and on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and everywhere else you get your podcasts.
Today's show has been brought to you in part by the Election Ride Home podcast. I got to tell you about this great show. It's called the Election Ride Home. Someone's going to challenge Donald Trump for the White House, one of those 20 or 30 Democrats. And the Election Ride Home is a podcast dedicated to figuring out who that someone, or maybe even multiple someones, will end up being. Every day at 5 p.m. Eastern, veteran journalist and This American Life contributor Chris Higgins catches you up on what happened on the campaign trail, who's up, who's down, what issues are getting traction, what do the polls say. It's 15 to 20 minutes that keeps track of all the latest and summarizes it so you don't have to be nervously refreshing your web browser 1,000 times a day. So if you want to catch up on what you missed on your way home, search your podcast app and subscribe to the Election Ride Home podcast.